as well. But Matt Rendell's been good enough to join me again after being cut off by the Prime Minister, of all people, yesterday. Matty, welcome back to the program.
I can't believe I got bumped for the ScoMo. Give me a spell.
There's very few people in this world that I'll bump you for, Matty, but I had to bump you for ScoMo. But you're in full flow talking about the beauty of Diesel Williams, and you're about to give me your top five midfielders of all time, and I was intrigued by the conversation, and I was dirty not to hear the rest of it. So talk me through the rest of it. And for those people who didn't hear you talking about Diesel, firstly, yesterday as your number one, just give us a snapshot of Diesel again, if you can.
He played his first game against us in Geelong. He got discarded twice by David Parkin at Carlton. He was from their area because he was deemed to be too slow. So Geelong picked him up and he played his first game against us in 1984 and he absolutely flogged us in the midfield. And I doubt whether he played a poor game for the rest of his career. 250-odd, I think he played. He virtually got tagged every game, but what I liked, his influence was huge. And when I judge players, even young kids today, the thing I like to look at, and sometimes it's a bit hard to see, I always say Joe Blocks can see talent. You go to a footy game and you can see the talent, but not a lot of people can see influence and the little subtle things they do and the team things they do. And so when I talk about midfielders, this is probably a bit different midfield top five to maybe a few. Oh, it'll be close. But I like to talk about their influence, their toughness, their team, ability to kick goals playing as a midfielder, and especially if they're being tagged every week. So not so many of the blokes today get tagged every week. But back then in the 80s and the 90s, everyone had a tagger. Everyone got tagged. Diesel got tagged every week and was still a great player. And his disposal, his ability to kick goals, and his influence and his toughness around the ball. He was a really tough player. I thought he was the second best player I've seen. Obviously, number one's always been the Duck for me. And the Duck has always been the best for me because his influence was massive on games. You know, he just won games by himself. Now, I know they had plans for him all the time and, you know, the Pagans paddock was designed for the Duck, but, you know, he just had too big an influence on games to not be my number one player. But Williams was my second best at in the midfield. Bossy was number two in the midfield. He played his first game when I was playing in my last year. He was a 16-year-old at 28, kicked three on the wing against Fitzroy on Johnny Blakey. He came out of the under-16 champs when he kicked 16 in the game. Admittedly, they weren't playing against the Vicks or the WA South Australia. It's just the Northern States. But, you know, he was a 16-year-old, 28, kicked three off the wing. But he played super footy all the way through, kicked a lot of goals. But he was, people might say Akamanis, Power, Lappin, better in the midfield. I would doubt, but I think his presence in there allowed those other players, those runners and more of an outside players to play, to use their strengths. He was a fantastic player. Chris Judd, I put in number three. Once again, look, he carried, I know they had a great midfield with Cousins and the like, but he carried a lot of them got out of the loop because he was getting the best player every week, the best tagger. A lot of them didn't get tagged because they were always on him, and he was still a massively influential player. Great record, kick goals. Really, really enjoyed watching him play. And all these players I'm going to name, I can't remember them playing a poor game, even when they had someone up their ginger the whole game. And that's a testament to their mental strength. I had Buckley in at four. I just went back to look over. I wasn't sure how many goals he kicked as a midfielder, but he actually kicked a lot more than Voss, Judd and Williams. Which surprised me. So, once again, look, he's got a lot of awards, but he was in a team that wasn't very successful. So you would expect him to win their best and fairest every year. But his ability to handle tags week in, week out was brilliant. And his kicking and disposal brought other people into the game. I had a big dilemma on the next 5 because I put 5/Dangerfield in.
Yeah.
And when I went back and had a look at some of their stats, I changed it to Dangerfield, then 5. Kicked a lot more goals than 5, Dangerfield has. Probably played a little bit more forward. But 5's probably been a victim of missing maybe a couple of years there with injury all up. Certainly missed, I reckon, 1 year, virtually hardly played. So, and he's 2 years behind Dangerfield. I know he's won two Brownlows. He could easily go past him, but both of them have been superstars, very powerful, very tough midfielders, tagged every week, basically, but very influential in their team's success. I sort of put in 6 there. Dwayne, I want a special mention for Wayne Johnson. My son asked me who. part of the Mosquito fleet of Carlton's great success in the late 70s and 80s, probably played more as a half forward than a mid. But, you know, they had the Ashmans, Mark Coos, Sheldons, the great Mosquito fleet. But he was the leader of that group. He set the tone right from the start. I remember a game we played at their ground, and Ross Lyon was at the peak of his form for us. But Ross was about the toughest player I've ever seen play the game. Him and Archer are in a class of their own. Ross used to come off the line playing as a half forward and try and kill the opposition. And Jono didn't like what he was seeing after he got a couple. So Jono lined up on the other side of the ground and they ran at each other for a half in the middle and just smashed into each other. We were calling Rossy Moses because we were just jumping out of the way. They were parting the seas, those two blokes, running through the middle and running at each other. And Jono wasn't or neither of them actually were big boys. But, boy, God, they were tough, both of those blokes. And very underrated, Jono. Played a couple hundred games. Didn't realise he played a season at Sturt or played a few games at Sturt.
Right.
Got out of the late 70s, 80s. I really loved him as a player. You could watch him play. Light on his feet. Genuinely tough. Buddha Hocking probably just behind them too. Same thing. Genuinely tough, left and right. Rarely played poorly, got tagged every week. Played with a lot of adversity too, Buddy. He had really bad knees.
Yeah.
And then I just want to read out another little group. They're more runners. They got tagged every week, but they were runners and outside runners more so. Watson, Bradley, Cousins, Flea Wilson, Johnny Platton, Robbie Flower was still kicking goals in finals in 87 and was beautiful to watch. So. And then how can you leave out Jeff Raines, Dipper Domenico, Jared Healy, Pants Mullane, Brian Peake. He was a star, Dwayne.
Yeah, Mick Turner was just telling me that he reckons he was as good as Peakey, which is interesting because I was post the Brian Peake era. You're a little bit older than me, Matty, so I don't remember... Mm. Peaky at the peak of his powers. You know, the nickname was Pasties when he got to Geelong because he got to the Cats when he was past his peak. So he's in essence in the Hall of Fame because of what he did in WA and in the VFL back in the day. But, you know, going through those names that you've got in your top 10, you've squeezed a few in, but to think that Wayne Johnson only got into the Hall of Fame, what, 2 years ago? So he had to wait a long time, Jono. The Dominator, he got in maybe 3 years ago, but he had to wait a long time.
Yeah, that surprises me. But when you look at, Dougie Hawkins was another one I missed there too. It's fantastic. That surprises me that it took him so long. I would have thought a lot of players out of the 80s would have said that they would have had him rated in the top 5 for midfielders in the 80s, I would have thought.
So if playing for multiple teams like Jeff Raines did, is that detrimental to the way that clubs and fans look back at him? Because, you know, you tended more to idolise the guys who were one club players, perhaps like Vossi, and we idolise how good maybe Tim Watson was, and Craig Bradley, and Ben Cousins. But when you look at guys like Diesel and Raines who played with multiple teams, it's not the fans don't necessarily look back on them quite as fondly.
Well, I would say that depends where your love of the game lies. So I love the game. I barrack for the game. I don't barrack for a team.
So if you're barrack for it, if you're more like you're barrack for the team and more involved in the team, you're probably going to look at it the way you just spoke about. But from my point of view, I don't care how many teams they played for. I just admire how good they were, and you know, I watched that grand final. I watched the grand final yesterday of '92, and I saw how good Djokovic was, and Matera. I think kicked five off the wing. You know, I've left him out, Matera.
Yeah.
You know, such good players over a long period of time. We forget them easily, don't we? Sad thing. It's good that shows like your, you know, like yours, Dwayne, and you can bring up all this old stuff, and the good thing is you can YouTube a lot of it as well too, and it's great they're playing some of these old games out there, and you look back and go, oh God, how good was footy in the 90s? How quick was it, and how tough was it? It was a much better spectacle than it is today, isn't it, Dwayne?
Well, I like the game today, but there was something unique about that early 90s. I've just been talking about it with Dermot, and I've just been talking about it with Mick Turner, where the essence of football, there was something uniquely beautiful about it. Maybe it was the one-on-ones. Maybe it was the ability of key forwards to be able to take great pack marks. And maybe it was the two-sided, smooth-moving midfielder who won a hard ball but also could hit your lace out with a pass. And those things, I know, are still part of today's game, but the contested mark isn't as valuable to a recruiter like you who's going out and trying to recruit a key forward. And being two-sided isn't quite as valuable either as it once was. Once upon a time, a coach would tell you to go home if you couldn't kick on your opposite.
Exactly. And you used to do... Look, we used to have nights of training where you had to do the whole night on your wrong foot or your opposite side. You know,
yeah.
That would be the edict. You had to be good at it. And I was watching those blacks are just turning on their left foot or on their wrong side. They didn't care. You know, doing short passes out of the back line, people would be mortified today if that happened, if players started doing that. So that's changed. But I've got no doubt that the key to it is, back 80s and 90s, no doubt that it was the play-on quick edict.
Yeah.
And that's right, even to the 2000s. That is what has changed. Now teams want to control the ball, you know, a few short kicks. Let's slow it down, see what we can set up here. By the time you've slowed it down and set up, the opposition is set up in defence. It's a lot easier to set up in defence when you slow it down. And I've got no doubt the way the teams were told to move the ball quick, that's your best opportunity to score, is the difference between yesteryear and today. And we need to get back to yesteryear on moving the ball on quick. And we've seen a couple of teams do it, and we drain. Like, Richmond have changed the game by doing it. One, two flags doing it. And certainly Brisbane are doing it. And it got them to where they got to last year, where they're probably not ready to be there. But Chris Fagan understands we need to bring people through the gates. We need to move the ball quick. Yeah. They want to watch entertaining stuff. They don't watch slow stuff. We're trying to win the hearts and minds of people up here. It's really difficult. They don't want to go watch slow footy, defensive footy. They want to go watch attacking footy. So Chris Fagan's clearly got it right up there as well. And I reckon Leon Cameron in GWS has as well.
Great talking to you, Matty. Always love being able to pick your brain. The lines are open.
Have you got one more minute?
I have. 1-300-736-736. You can jump on the open line right now, and I'll come to your calls after we have one more minute with Matty Rendell. And in that minute, can you weave in just to a couple of upset people on the speckled text ask me why I even got Gary Ablett Jr. or her to mention, even though you did mention Lee Matthews yesterday. But, give me one more minute, Matty, before you say farewell.
Yeah, no, they're right. I can't argue with that.
Fair enough. Leave me with something else before we go.
The women's footy's going to be under the pump. It costs us a heap of dough every year, the AFL. I'm thinking, you know, between 15 and 20 mil all up. And they're worried about their future. And I was just thinking how they can get an end out of it. And I thought, I'll have it next year. Let's train. You'll be on minimal staff. why don't people pay $5 to get in and it goes towards the staff and the players? And if you can get 5,000 to a game, there's 25,000. People go to 8 games, cost them $40 next year, and the girls and their staff can get a bit of an earn out at next year. I reckon everyone would be happy to pay $5 to get in next year to go to women's footy if they cut a lot of the funding for it. That was just something I was thinking about the other day, because I think it's pretty important we keep the women's footy.
I'll open the lines on that as well, Matty. Nice thought. I can't see $5 stopping someone from going to an AFLW game if they were intending to go for free. Nice thought to finish on. Great.
1 year.
Yeah, 1 year. Yep. Matty Rendell, you're a superstar, Matty. You'll be back in footy before we know it. Thanks for your time.
No worries, Tyne. Thanks, mate.
Matt Rendell joining me for a chat. 1-300-736-736 is the number. You're with Dwayne Swart.